Welcome to the Portland Real Estate Podcast, Oregon and Southwest Washington's number one show for real estate news and information. Without further ado, here are your hosts and a couple of guys who, as busy realtors and successful brokerage owners, know a thing or two about real estate. Steve Nassar of Premier Property Group and Joe Fistolo of Soldera Properties.
Here we are.
Hey, Joe.
Welcome, everybody. This is episode number 158, the much, much anticipated NAR lawsuit and settlement and what it means to us and buyer rep agreements and all kinds of stuff. We were going to do the NAR lawsuit and settlement as well as the Best of Masters, but after that was posted, we combed through Masters and found that we haven't talked about anything but this, and it's understandable. You don't worry about the drip under the kitchen sink when your living room's on fire. So the Best of Masters will be all-encompassing of the NAR settlement. I want to encourage you, the people in the group Masters in Real Estate get to watch this live, and you get the opportunity to ask your questions and comment, which we'll address during this podcast. And if you are watching live, you'll see I have my coffee cup with my tea bag hanging out of it. But for all you know, it very well could be bourbon in here.
Bourbon with a tea bag in it.
With that, I want to introduce my co-host, Steve Nassar. Steve, how are you?
Hey, Joe. You mean we're not just jumping on here to talk about lockboxes and issues with them today?
Yeah.
I could have swore that's what everybody wanted to hear us talk about.
Gosh.
Maybe our listings and what we should do to properly button them up after a showing.
Right.
By the way, Joe, we have our largest live audience I think we've ever had, don't you?
I think so. This is a hot topic. And Steve, you have you and me that have been around for a while. We work at a high level. We have lots of responsibility. And I feel that you and I have a pretty good pulse on the market. So for those of our members in Masters in Real Estate, they kind of want to hear this take, not at a NAR national level, but they kind of want to hear what this means to us and what it might look like moving forward. So I think before we jump in, we do have so many listeners, and not everybody is a realtor. We have attorneys and surveyors and title companies and lenders and you name it. So I kind of want to do a walk through history to present of how the commission structure looked like and how these mandates came down. Like, oblige me for about 2 minutes. But when I started in real estate, everybody was a sub-agent to the seller. You had the listing agent that works for the seller, and the person that brought the buyer was a sub-agent to the seller. So the buyer didn't really have any representation because that sub-agent's fiduciary responsibility was with the seller. Years passed, and they said, you know what? The buyer really needs their own representation. We want the buyer's agent's fiduciary responsibility to be within the buyer's best interest to protect them. However, we were still paid by the seller at that time, still the same way. Then you go about a year and a half ago, and they said commissions should be transparent. They need to be posted everywhere on all the third-party sites, everywhere. The buyer should realize what the payout is for us, and commissions were made public for a brief period of time. Then the lawsuit happened, and NAR was found that they need to pay what could have been potentially $5.4 billion with a B. And then when that went through, negotiations started. And what was just announced the other day is they settled for $418 million with an M, with some changes. The ruling of a couple of years ago that the BAC would be transparent and it would be posted everywhere, now it's removed from everywhere, as well as buyer representation agreements will be required and will be mandatory in all 50 states. I don't know if we're there yet, but it will happen. And
July is what they're saying.
Yeah.
With court approval, by the way.
With court approval.
Yeah.
So here we are. That's the summary. And Steve, you got any opening statements to any of that?
Yeah. I've said this before and it's worth repeating today, right? We have this podcast, Joe. It's fast approaching 10 years that it's been around, the Portland Real Estate Podcast. Masters in Real Estate has been around, correct me if I'm not wrong, like 12-ish years, right?
12, yeah.
There's a lot of times where there isn't a lot to talk about, right? We keep our audience around by doing shows at times where maybe there's just little housekeeping stuff here or there, but we do them. And here's why we do them. For the days and moments when there are huge things to talk about, like this. And by the way, Sally Sue, we have some big stuff happening here. I mean, this is cataclysmic, massive changes to our industry, probably akin to what Dodd-Frank did to the mortgage industry back in 2010, right? So yes, we have our largest live audience, maybe double or triple what we usually have watching us. And that's the live people. That's people that just actually book time to sit here with us today. And hopefully they bring in some good content and questions and topics for us as they're live here. But that's not even to speak about how many thousands of people are going to later watch this as a video or listen to it as a podcast. So yes, this is a huge change. One thing I wanted to say from the get-go that I think is important to address. First of all, we all have to have some humility. We don't know how this is going to shake out. Nobody knows. First, I mean, down to the fact that I just said it's got to be court approved. If we could sit here and opine and talk about every direction this goes, and then some judge could slam a gavel and say, no, it's not happening. So not predicting that by any stretch. And I would be surprised if that happened. But along those notes, there's been other many times in my tenure with this podcast and with Masters in Real Estate, and my experience in the real estate industry, where things come out and roll out and we think it's going to go one direction and it just goes in a different direction. I mean, for example, you know, the release of new Oregon forms a couple years ago, I mean, or a year or so ago, we had a lot of, you know, speculation about how that was going to play out. Well, it seems like just about no one is using the new forms. That I couldn't have guessed that, right? So there's a lot that we are guessing here. Now, we have good guesses and we have good predictions, but please understand that we are acknowledging that there's a lot that's going to change and no one knows for sure the direction things are going to move. So what would you like to start with, Joe?
So what happens to be most popular is, will the commissions go down holistically, do you think?
Yes, the pie is going to get smaller. Absolutely. One thing that I have, and by the way, this is not our first podcast on the subject. We when the lawsuit first went down, you and I jumped on here back in November, and we said there's a high likelihood in the near future commissions are going to get decoupled. Here's a couple different ways it could go. And a lot of what we are talking about today has already been discussed in the past. Now, one of the things that I said then, and I firmly believe today, the listing side of the business is exactly the same. It is very safe. There is shelter from the storm as a listing agent. Virtually nothing should change there as far as your commissions. It's even possible, maybe even probable, that they could go up ever so slightly. And part of that is because now the sellers are highly, there's a high likelihood that's the only commission you're discussing when you're meeting with them, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
So that part is safe, but the buyer commissions are going to have massive headwinds. Now, I know there's a lot of talk about you got to show your value. You got to show your value. And even if that is the case, and even if you show your value, which I agree with, and you get the same commission as before, which I question will happen, but let's say you do, that's still a headwind because you had to sit there and talk with them for 30, 45 minutes, an hour, maybe follow up several times. And as you're showing that value, that's something we didn't have to do before. So at the very least, it's going to be more time consuming to get buyers, okay? Which would affect commissions. Now, that said, I find it unlikely that commissions on the buyer side are going to stay exactly the same. I think there will be downward pressure on them. So the entire pie, and I think on one of our podcasts, I had heard, I had read somewhere that in 2021, there was $100 billion in commissions. And that 2021 was a good year for real estate, by the way. $100 billion in commissions in the entire country. That's the pie. That's what I'm talking about. That piece of the pie is going to shrink, right? Is it going to be 70 billion apples to apples? Is it going to be 80 billion? I don't know. I don't think we know, but I think it is highly likely that there will shrink. So as an industry, and you and I, we talked about this a little before we're on the air, Joe. I mean, we both own brokerages. And so we're going to feel this in two ways. You and I are going to feel this in our personal businesses, but we're also going to feel this as brokerage owners. On the brokerage side, there is going to be that felt. I mean, as commissions go down across the brokerage, of course, you know, you're going to feel that. You're going to have agents that can't make it. You're going to have, you know, there's going to be some collateral damage that's unfortunate through that. Now, I will tell you, as a agent who is very listing focused, I'm less concerned about my individual business. I think it will probably, and this is my prediction, it'll probably stay similar. Maybe even there could be some improvements. One of those being, I think we're going to see double-ended transactions go up. And one of the other things I want to say here real quick is, please don't hate the messengers. Like, things we say that we predict are going to happen, we aren't asking for these to happen. We are simply digesting, like all of you, what is occurring and giving it our best opinion and guess of what could happen. So don't hate us. If I say, I think there's going to be a lot more transactions double-ended, don't get mad and say, well, gosh darn it, Steve Nassar wants more double-ended transactions. I didn't ask for this, nor did Joe, and neither did any of you guys. The consumers and ultimately, ultimately the consumers and the mass population is what who wants this and has decided this. But I think it's unlikely to think that there's not going to be a high probability that more buyers will go straight to sellers. Would you agree with that, Joe?
Yeah, actually, that was part of the commission conversation. And before we jump into it, I want to say I'm so happy you're the co-host on this podcast, because talking with a layer of antitrust laws that are watching us slip up and talk about standard commissions or anything we're not supposed to say, I know that you and I both know how to talk about this and still be within the antitrust laws. I think with the commissions, so if you look at, there's other real estate related services out there that aren't as well organized as realtors, such as property management. They have a house that they need to lease. They're the only person that's going to lease it. There isn't a property manager usually that runs around trying to find houses for people who want to rent. Usually the people just get their places to rent out and they're the ones working to put someone in it. Same with commercial. They don't have a very cohesive system through CoStar that purchased LoopNet like we have in RMLS. And so what you said makes sense. In the past, in RMLS, when you fill out a listing, there's a little area we have to check to say commissions may change if you bring the buyer yourself, right? There's that thing we need to disclose. If the buyer comes to you or your company or however you set it up on your listing, commissions could be subject to change and you have to state that. Well, usually if you have a listing for X commission and if the buyer comes to you, normally you talk with the seller and say, well, if the buyer comes through me, I will reduce it by a certain amount. I see that flipping. I see the listing agent maybe getting more commission on a standard if the sellers don't agree to pay the buyer's agent. And I see a lot of people shopping, looking to write an offer through the listing agent. And if that's the case, maybe whatever your standard commission is, it goes up a little bit if you're going to be representing the buyer.
Absolutely.
I think that could happen. And so the buyer market out there, hey, I'm going to use my nephew, Bill, to write an offer for me on a house, when they don't have to pay him whatsoever. It's all kind of free to them. But if there's a dollar amount assigned with buying a house, and if the buyer truly has to pay it and the sellers in the future are unwilling to pay it, then for X amount of dollars, they're probably going to want the absolute best representation they can get for their money versus, hey, it doesn't cost me anything. Let's support this guy I graduated high school with, or this gal that's my neighbor.
That's a really good point, Joe, that I hadn't thought of. And that's a positive thing. That's a positive thing for the industry, right?
Well, it is positive. And so the other thing that's, you gotta look for your roses and thorns, right? There's a lot of thorns in this, but if we try and look at the positive side, what we've been trying to do in Masters in Real Estate, and what we've been trying to do in this podcast, is raise the professionalism of our entire industry. And for the first time in real estate history, the buyer's agent now has to prove their worth. They never had to do it. All of the workload was on the listing agent. They get the listing, and the commission was negotiated, and whatever they offered is what you get. Now the buyer's agent has to have some serious conversations. What are they going to do for this buyer? They're going to look on and off the market. They're going to negotiate for them on the price. They're going to try and get credits and their move-in date and, you know, their minimized rent back or whatever they're looking for, and prove to them that you, as a buyer's agent, are worth it to them more than any other buyer's agent. So I think that's going to be another cleaning house of every time the market dips, there's a lot of attrition in the real estate market. And for the people that are kind of hobbyists or just kind of limping along, the big test is January 25th, when the NAR dues of $685 need to get paid. That's when a lot of people tap out. Well, I'm saying if you want to stay in this business, you need to level up your game as a buyer's agent. And if you don't, there's going to be a lot of attrition on that side as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I think holistically, it'll raise the professionalism of the industry, and we'll have a little bit less competition, and everybody in the game will be at a little bit higher level, and you won't have the person that does it part-time and they're going to transition to real estate once they make more money in real estate than they do at hairstyling or whatever their other job is. Traditionally, that really never happens. And this is where the rubber meets the road, and they absolutely need to figure out, I need to take this seriously as a full-time broker and level up my game, or I'm going to be a statistic.
Yeah, I want to respect our people that are watching us live and commenting real quick, Joe. So I'm going to address a couple things. Eric Post, he has got a couple comments. Point of possible clarification, seller never paid buyer's agents directly. Seller paid listing brokerage based on listing agreement that was owned by the brokerage. Listing brokerage paid buyer's agent based on MLS rules. Then associated brokerages paid the appropriate agents. This is important because the real decoupling came at the MLS level. And he also said that is the talk track, but also remember that 85% of sellers only speak to one listing agent and spend less than 3 hours total researching the process themselves. The listing agents have to price their worth, but still don't often compete. Marianne Sinkler asked a question. I'll throw at you, Joe. Thoughts on how/when possible seller paid commissions will be communicated, if not via the MLS? You want to address that, Joe?
Yeah, read that again.
What are your thoughts on how/when possible seller paid commissions will be communicated, if not via the MLS? Tell you what, I'll take a quick stab at this.
Sure.
It has been said that there's nothing to prevent us from vocalizing it. So yes, an agent could call the listing agent and ask them, is the seller willing to pay a buyer's agent commission? There was speculation. We had a mastermind in our office yesterday in our Lake Oswego office. We had a large group of our $10 to $20 million. We've broken up our company into different volume segments based on production in 2023. And we had a mastermind yesterday. We do it quarterly, of our agents that close between 10 and 20 million. Jeff Wyron and myself led the group. And it was awesome. We had an hour and a half discussion about a lot of non-commission related stuff that was really productive and really energizing. We then at the very end shifted to this topic and the room was just electric. I've never seen more hands up, more questions. People stayed an hour longer than we had allotted for time talking about this. One of the things that Jeff brought up as a possibility, and I don't know, I don't fully know where he got this from, or if it's a prediction or if it's something that he has confirmed definitively, but he seemed to think that as long as it's called a concession. Okay. And here's what I mean by this. I have listings with a builder that I work with, Riverside Homes, where in the public and private comments, we put seller willing to pay $15,000 towards buyer concessions. He seemed to think that is possible still to be said in the future in the private comments, with an understanding that maybe the buyer could use those towards their agent. Does that make sense, Joe?
Yes. And let me clarify. So there's a huge difference between Washington law and Oregon law. And Steve, you're licensed in both, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So I'm not. I'm Oregon only, but I have a branch in Washington. A couple things that are important to note. In the Washington Buyer Representation Agreement, it says if there's no BAC in their buyer rep agreement, the buyer can choose not to see those. So what I have in my hand, Chapter 8, it says showing properties, showings, listings, VA financing, showing properties. Buyer broker shall or shall not be obligated to show properties to buyer for which there is no offer and buyer has not agreed to pay the compensation. So that's one thing they have. The other thing is for Washington, the seller can say they are offering a concession. However, it cannot be a condition if they have a buyer's agent or not, right? You can't say, hey, I'm offering a concession to a buyer's agent. And if they go directly through the listing agent, it's something different. I don't know if they just say there's a concession available and they don't get specific, but that's something to know. The third point that is quite relevant is buyer rep agreements have been mandatory in Washington for about 3 months now, and Washington is not on fire, right? They're still conducting business as normal. Buyers, when you have a buyer's agent that proves their worth, they have no problem signing the buyer representation agreement. So everyone that thinks this is the end of the world, I don't think it's going to be the end of the world, but we have to change how we do things. We do now have to have a buyer presentation as well as a seller presentation. And it's unknown, you know, if this all goes through, it'll happen around June. And I'm sure there'll be specific rules as to sellers who are willing to pay a compensation and those who are not and how that's relayed. It might have to be a lot of phone calls with the buyer's agent and the listing agent.
But if you think about it, Joe, I kind of agree with Jeff. Like, think about it. Unless they're going to tell us moving forward, we can't do that for my builder, which is put in the MLS how much of a concession they're willing to make towards closing costs for or prepaids and buy downs. if the seller is willing to give $15,000 towards buy downs in the future, couldn't that same amount go towards commissions? It's the same amount. The other thing that is interesting is prices can be raised even above asking price to include those concessions. Correct, right? So if a house is $600,000 and an agent wants to write in, you know, $20,000 for commissions, hopefully I'm not saying percentages there, but I'm just giving a number.
For example,
okay, so that's a net to the seller of $580. Well, if the seller really wants to, they could counter back and say, no, price is $620 with, you know, all else being equal.
By the way, what Eric Post wrote is 100% accurate. Super accurate. And you know what you just described, Steve, is an exact reverse engineering of the way we were doing it just a couple of years ago, right? Because if you think about how it is, let's take $1 million house and let's use an arbitrary number of, say, a 2.5% BAC, just for the sake of an example. If a buyer is going to put 20% down on $1 million house, that's $200,000. They have all their inspections. They have usually a 1% loan origination fee with their lender. They have their half of the Alta at escrow. And then beyond all of that, they're going to have to cough up, in this example, 2.5 of $1 million is $25,000. And if you asked all those buyers, hey, would you rather pay $1,025,000 and then finance it over 30 years and not have to cough up an additional $25,000, most of the people will say absolutely, which also begs the question, will the lenders be considering absorbing buyer broker commission in the loan? That's been discussed. I don't know if there's resolution on that, but that's been intimated more than a few times over the last 3 months.
Yeah. Crystal Seely, increasing the sales price of the home to cover commissions, wouldn't that artificially inflate prices? No differently than they are now. Apples and apples. It's all in there. It's algebra, right?
Market value will prevail, but there's creative financing for if a buyer has to maybe pay a commission versus adding it to the price. It can look like an inflated value, but it's still going to sell for market value. They just structured it a little bit differently.
Well, and the next question acknowledges that because it talks about appraisers. But this is Kella Fuller-Zacker. But appraisers and lenders will be savvy to this movement, therefore probably won't work. Tying BAC. I mean, it's not a new idea, guys. It's happening constantly right now with buy-downs, right? So I'm not sure why that would be different. Ethan Sackfield, the concession idea makes sense, but then we run into an issue because lending has never seen a BAC as a concession, and they have caps on interested party contributions. Doreen Gorens, what kind of document verbiage would be required to ensure a verbal from listing agent that BAC would be paid by seller? Currently, the MLS screenshot and commission demand suffices in this role. It's called an offer. You're going to write an offer, and it's going to say how much you're asking for, and they're going to respond. Currently in Washington, that's already the case. I can assure you by July, we're going to have that on Oregon forms. Both REF and the Oregon realtors are going to add a line where it notates how much commission is being paid.
Well, and so we do have something, and this is straight from, I think her name's Colleen Gordon of NAR, I believe. And look, we've been drinking out of a fire hose since all of this happened. I probably have my 30 hours of extended 2-year additional credit education just in the NAR stuff. She flashed something on the screen that I took a picture of that you can write in that says, buyer is making a condition of this offer that seller pays selling broker X amount percentage of the sale price. They write it in as a condition to the offer straight from the NAR person. And before all of this shook down, I've copied and pasted that into offers before, where it was a little ambiguous. And So that's one thing that's sort of a quick fix. The other thing I'll tell you is, if we're all negotiating commissions here, if you're negotiating commissions, make sure you have a buyer representation sign that says exactly what you're talking about. You know, don't try and wing it. Make sure you have that buyer rep signed. And it's in the interest of your buyer. Let's say, as an example, the offering, which this is all going away, so this will be moot in potentially June if this goes through. Let's say they're offering, I'm going to pick an even number, 2% for BAC. And let's say you have a buyer representation agreement that is higher than that. For example purposes, let's say 2.5%. Well, you can be lobbying to get that extra half of 1% from the seller based on your buyer representation. Someone has to pay it, right? Either the seller or the buyer. If the seller is unwilling to do it, I bet you that changes the buyer's offer, right? The offer is going to be a minimum of 0.5 lower, I would suspect. So there is a lot to think about. I have one here from Todd Bramwell that said, double-ended representation, would this not be a huge target for DOJ? So you can write an offer for the buyer on your own listing. You don't have to represent the buyer.
That's correct.
We highly encourage you to only have, you know, one party that you represent. The real estate commissioner says the more hats you wear, the more liable you are. And all that takes is one person to say, hey, you know what? I don't feel like I was represented. They come in with a grand slam addendum asking for everything and it doesn't get accepted and they get countered. And they're like, you know, I don't think I was represented. When you are brought up on those charges, it's almost a guilty until proven innocent. So stay in your lane. Your first fiduciary relationship in this example is the seller's as a listing agent. And you could do whatever you want and still represent only the sellers. That is my recommendation.
Yeah. I don't see that happening. I mean, the DOJ is more concerned with commissions coming down, and the argument can be made that if an agent is on both sides, there's reduced commissions. So I'm not saying there's not unintended consequences that will happen, but you know, like to your point, Joe, that happens in the commercial world frequently. That happens with landlords frequently, where, you know, property management. So, you know, this isn't without precedent. There's a lot of precedent to what's happening here that that will come into play.
So one other thing to mention is, so first of all, everybody hates change. It's given, whether it's perceived positive or negative or neutral. People just hate change. With change comes chaos. With chaos comes opportunity. With that opportunity arises new entities that form, usually that reduces everything. There's always somebody that will come up with a menu of services a la carte, and they'll say, hey, you're a buyer and you want to buy a house and you don't want to pay these exorbitant fees. I will show you the house, write an offer, negotiate repair addendum, and be there at closing for a flat fee. And these people jump into the market and they try and make it up in volume versus having one decent payday. So they could say, gosh, I had 30 extra deals this year of all I did is just sat there and wrote offers. And yes, I made a fraction of what I would have made, but I'm pretty sure I wouldn't have had those extra 30 deals. So some pie is better than no pie. And I believe there are going to be entities. I think maybe Zillow is already positioning this way to have a menu of services. If you're looking to buy a house, here's what we're going to offer. This is speculation. It's kind of educated speculation, but we think that's coming down the...
Mm-hmm. Hey, there's a great point here from Eric Ryan. In the past, in the credit towards buyers concessions world, there could there be a concern that the appraiser wouldn't give that extra bump towards value? We've seen appraisers not giving closing costs and deals fall apart as a result. Could we be in a position where we get 3 weeks into a deal and discover a commission is essentially negated by an appraisal? Absolutely. Yeah. Sorry. That is a reality. Absolutely. And it's an unfortunate one, of course. Patty Smith, without knowing the BAC and transactions, the ability to perform accurate CMA will be impaired. I'm not buying that. I'm seeing talk and chatter about housing prices going down or changing because of this, because before this, there was real estate commissions built in. I'm not necessarily personally seeing that direct correlation. I think, first of all, it's such a small percentage. I mean, we're talking about, remember, the listing side of the commission is safe. So we're talking about a couple percentage points of commission here. And I just don't see that being correlated. I no differently than for the last 2 years, we've been in a high interest rate environment where a lot of deals have closing costs built in going towards rate buydowns. Are we saying that's been affecting housing prices? I'm not making that direct connection. So I would be less concerned about that personally.
We haven't had much trouble appraising. It's always a little worrisome when you go on the market at $800,000 2 years ago when it was white hot, right? And it ends up selling for $975 over ask. So now the appraiser comes and they have to say, okay, you were asking eight and it's $975. You might have trouble appraising. A lot of them worked out just fine. Some of them did have trouble, but written in there was the appraisal gap that the buyer would say, hey, look, we will cover the first 30 grand of an appraisal gap, or we'll cover it all, right? Everybody wants it to appraise. The seller does, the buyer does. Well, if appraisal becomes an issue, I wonder if you tack on, in your example, Steve, a $600,000 house, and let's just say it's sold for $620, I think you said, and that is to go towards the buyer agent, I wonder if there will be maybe a commission gap. What if it doesn't appraise? Then what happens?
It's a problem. It's definitely a problem. And that brings up another point, Joe. And I've been thinking about this right now in this market that we're in. I'm seeing sellers that want to sell their houses, right? They want to Yes. sell their houses. They're going to be cooperative with buyer's agents. In most cases, right? I am concerned, rightfully so, that if we get into a 2021 type hot market, and maybe it'll never be quite that hot because that was a crazy market. But if we get into another hot market, and we all know we will at some point, and suddenly there's two, three, four offers coming in, that is going to be problematic for buyer's agents. More so, that is going to be a really massive headwind because you can see where there's going to be less will for the sellers to be cooperative in that regards. And there may be almost a race to the bottom on the buyer's agent's parts just to get their deals accepted where they're reducing their commissions, which is unfortunate for us as an industry, right? You could argue it's good for the consumers and that's what they wanted in this. And consumers generally come out on top as we're seeing here. But unfortunately for us as an industry, that will be problematic. It was one of the things that I appreciated back in 2021 when we were in that red hot market, Joe, where houses were getting 5-10 offers, buyer side commission stayed stable. We were seeing buyers throw everything but the kitchen sink, including love letters and all sorts of stuff to get their offers accepted. But as a industry, we were not seeing commissions come down. And this could be a game changer, an unfortunate one for our industry in that regards. Hey, let's talk about Zillow for a second. I just want to change this real quick.
Yeah.
Does anyone else besides me think this could be a Zillow killer? I mean, how does that business model move forward? I personally haven't been, I used to do a lot with Zillow. At one point, I was spending tens and tens of thousands a month with Zillow. And I built a solid business and database largely from a lot of those those leads. But moving forward, and most of us saw that their stock dropped on Friday, what, like 14%? Zillow for years, and I know this intimately from my experience with them, for years they've tried to figure out how to crack the nut of getting seller leads, and they haven't successed in that. They haven't been successful in that regards. So they've always, their bread and butter has always been buyer leads. Pay us money, we give you a lead, and then hopefully they buy a house and you get your commission, right? And some of that has been, in the past, it was pay us money up front and we'll give you the lead. Now, in some markets, it's what they call the flex program, where they simply take a big rip, not a small rip, but 40% of the commission. Can you imagine moving forward, starting in July and August? And actually, I mean, starting now, because the way Zillow works, they make you sign 6-month contracts. So people re-signing contracts now are committing to the new program. You're going to get a lead. You're going to have to run out to a house, and somewhere very quickly, you're going to have them sign something guaranteeing that they're paying you something. It seems highly problematic for their business model. That will be really interesting to watch how that shakes out.
I think in the near future, I think if sellers want to sell, even though if this goes through and they don't post a BAC, I think the sellers are still going to have to offer that. It's horse trading, right? If the buyer has to pay the commission to the buyer's agent, then that house might not sell for as much. So you got to cooperate. And something I've said on the podcast before, in extreme markets, there's always an asshole in every market, right? So if you look at 2007 to 2012, somebody bought a house for $900,000 and they're feeling the pinch. They're asking $600,000. And the buyers are like, I don't really have to buy. I'll give you $475,000 and, you know, take it, or I don't have to buy. I'm not the one with my feet against the fire. And then you look at 2021, where the sellers are like, well, we have 15 offers. And to be competitive, we need an appraisal gap. We need you to waive your inspection. We need your earnest money to go hard immediately. You know, it's over ask. And the sellers were kind of the jerks at that time. And then you go to July, just last July, rates were 8.25%. And the sellers are like, sellers willing to do a 2-1 buy down or a 3-2-1 buy down. So the buyer, the first year, a 3-2-1 at the cost of about $25,000, let's say. If the rates were 8.25%, the buyer's first year interest rate will be 5.25%, the second year, 6.25%, or and then 7.25% before it goes back to par at a cost of $25,000. So just because this NAR thing happened doesn't mean the sellers can fold their arms and say, we don't have to pay, so we're not going to pay. I think the way real estate has been happening is it's very conducive to sellers to continue paying that broker. And then we're going to have the disruptors that come in that say, hey, I'm a buyer's agent. And if the buyer pays me, I'm going to do it for a flat fee. But in all of the disruptions we have and the race to zero on commissions, there's always someone that will do it cheaper, right? In the face of adversity, there's always someone willing to pull their pants down and say, hey, look, I'm going to do it for a lot less. I'm going to make it up in volume. But the cliche goes, if you pay in peanuts, you have nothing but a bunch of elephants working for you, right? So think about, let's say you're getting LASIK eye surgery, right? We're not doctors. We don't do that. We're selling what happens to be most people's largest material asset. So I think that is very important, right up there with heart surgery and everything else. But if you had to have some medical procedure done, let's say heart surgery, do you want the guy that has done 10,000 successful heart surgeries at a high price? Or do you want the guy that just came out of med school and says, hey, I got a BOGO deal on heart valve replacement, you know, pay for two valves, get the other two valves for free. You're going to be my first patient ever. Well, you may not live long enough to see the results, right? So you're probably going to want to get the very best person you can for the money. And that is where upping your game comes into play. If you don't have a plan, and a lot of people, you know, I'm going to make up a statistic, but people that work with buyers really don't have a plan. Oh, you want to buy a house? Let's go look at them. And maybe they talk and educate them a little bit, but there is never really a sit down that proves value that says you take the two-page buyer representation agreement and you break it down in paragraphs. And then you have a presentation and you talk about paragraph one. And then you talk about paragraph two. And then you talk about paragraph three. And your whole presentation is exactly the two-page, well, in Oregon, it's two-page buyer representation agreement. So at the end, you bring out the buyer representation agreement. And any question they have, you can say, well, remember in my presentation, I talked about that here. I'm going to look at properties for you on and off the market. And I'm going to work weekdays and after hours and weekends. And, you know, we're in this together, treating your business like a business. I think the majority of buyers, brokers have never, ever done that before. And you are forced to put that together. And if you don't, you're going to exponentially have a more difficult time, especially if the disruptors come in and say, hey, we're flat fee buyer offer real estate. Come to us and we'll do it. I believe that is on the horizon.
Yeah. And that's not without precedent. Like you said, years ago on the listing side, we saw people come in with flat fees and it wasn't the end of the world, right? The industry powered through that. Hey, we have a couple comments about the Zillow situation. Paula Barnes Brotherton said Zillow would become click here and sign our buyer broker agreement. I hadn't thought about that. I don't know if that's possible or not. That's interesting. Julie Felsman said Wall Street thinks this is a Zillow killer. And then Julie Felsman also said, my theory about Zillow buyers, especially early stage buyers, are going to be very reluctant to sign a contract with a random agent they just met. Maybe agents showing a house Zillow lead, have them sign as an agreement specific to that house. And that is a good point. That is a really good point. That came up in our conversations yesterday in our mastermind. Keep in mind a couple things about buyer agreements. First of all, they don't have to be for a year. They don't have to be for a set amount of time. They could be for one day. They could be for one house. They could be one zip code. There is a lot of flexibility on those. The other thing that came up there is precedent for buyer's agency agreements. And remember, we have an agency pamphlet we're required to give every buyer we work with, right? And the idea is you provide it to them as you establish agency. I don't think it's likely that you cannot show any house unless you have a buyer's agent agreement. And let me give you a specific example. What about an open house? Does everybody really think we are going to sit in an open house and every person that walks in, we're going to have them sign a buyer's agency agreement for that house? I don't think so. And I doubt you think so, Joe. So time will tell how this shakes out, but it is quite likely that there is going to be a little bit of flexibility and latitude as to what can be shown. Time will tell. And this has been the case in Washington. And our Washington agents that were in our mastermind yesterday, they were kind of appreciative that this is happening because it's educating the consumers. I don't know if you've noticed this, Joe, but I mean, this has been in mainstream media quite visibly for the past week almost. CNN, CBS, a lot of news stations are, and a lot of it is hype and a lot of it is very blown out of proportion.
Did you see the big bang on the headline of what,
6% listing commission is dead or something
like that? Yeah. Um, it is, the 6% commission dead. And they can say that because they're not realtors, right? But that was their big hook to get people to read more than just the headline. And
good hook.
Pretty good hook. But it sent shockwaves of panic through realtors. It kind of got some of the sellers and buyers thinking, right? If you're a seller, you're thinking, hey, I got off early. If you're a, you know, I got off easy. If you're a buyer, you're like, oh, great. Now I'm in the buyer position and now I have to pay. There was something good in Masters. One of the articles is like, okay, so if you're, well, let me pull it up. But there is, I'll pull it up and I'll get back to it. But there's one good question that I have never heard before from David Martin. And it says, how would we have proof of what the BAC is? Could the listing agent offer different amounts to different agents?
Absolutely. I would absolutely go on record and say, yes, they can. And here's, and again, at some of these times, you have to take your realtor hat off and think of it from the consumer standpoint. And we talked about this in our podcast back in November. As a seller, it has been a little bit, from their vantage point, it has been a little bit problematic that they were going to pay the exact same percentage, whether they got a down and dirty lowball offer or a full price offer, right? Moving forward, I do believe that sellers will have the ability to adjust the commission based on the offer. Well, including going over asking price, if deemed to be necessary, right?
It's no different than a sliding scale.
If a low offer comes in to the seller and they don't like it, then they can negotiate and say, sorry, Mr. Buyer's Agent, I don't like your offer. I'm showing it with what I'm willing to pay you, and vice versa. So there is nothing that I'm reading or seeing that states they have to play fair across all agents or all offers.
Well, it is fair insofar as it's a negotiation, right?
That was absolutely. It's a new point of negotiation moving forward.
The basis of this entire thing is it's a negotiation. It's no different than a sliding scale for a seller. We don't do this very much. We don't do net commissions and we don't do sliding scales normally. But some people say, hey, if you get me $2 million for my house, I'm going to pay you this percentage. If you get me less than this, it's whatever the price is, your commission slides with the price, which is a sort of a net commission. I don't see that much, but it's no different than listing a house and saying, hey, brand new $25,000 hot tub included in sale, and the refrigerator and the washer dryer, all these things are included. Well, when the offer comes written and it's a lowball offer and they want to include all that stuff still, that's much different than the flyer you announced at full price, right? So if somebody comes in with a low offer and then they still want the hot tub and the refrigerator and all that other stuff, that's where you roll up your sleeves and you negotiate. On your particular offer, this stuff isn't included. But if you came up to a higher offer, absolutely. It's all included. I think that could be the same since it's open for negotiations. I think it could be the same, not necessarily dependent upon the agent or the company, right? Let's get that off the table, but dependent on the offer brought in. If it's based on the amount of the offer and what's included, the commission can change independent of who they work for, who it is, or what company. But I do think it can change because when this all goes away, if it does, the thing that held us to our commission agreement is if it said 2.5 or 2.25 or 3.0 BAC and RMLS, that was our guarantee that we write an offer, that's what you would get paid. That's off the table. So it's all a negotiation. And if the seller wants to contribute $1, $0, or a full commission that might be competitive in our market today, they can absolutely do that. And I've never had anyone ask, could that be a variable as well? Which is more reason to get your buyer representation agreement on point.
Yeah. And I will give our listeners a tiny bit of good news. That could also work in our advantage in a bad market. You could see sellers very excited to pay more than a commission that we've seen in the past, which isn't new. There, we've seen that in recent years where sellers are paying higher commissions than we normally see because they want to sell their house, right? I want to finish a point I was making. The Washington agents at our mastermind, they had been hitting some headwinds as they were approaching buyers and saying, I need you to sign this agreement. The buyers were ignorant to that fact. They're like, why do I have to sign this now? I've never signed these before. They felt like because of how this is playing out in the media in such a big way, that the mass population will be educated and will be more likely and agreeable to sign those, realizing that everybody has to now. So that was a positive that came out of that.
Exactly right. About 8 years ago, we did a buyer representation class. This is before anybody used them as a standard, right? 8 years ago at Eastmoreland Golf Course, Cheryl Clunes and I, mostly Cheryl, but I was part of it, did a class for about 400 people, the importance of proving your worth and signing a buyer representation agreement. And I had more people come up to me after that and they say, how am I going to get them to do that when they can just go to anybody who doesn't make them sign that? How can I do that? And then I had other people come up to me and they say, you know what? I have a good sense of people's character and I won't work with anyone I don't trust. And so I don't make them sign it. But statistically, they get screwed every year out of someone that they showed during the weekend, after hours, showed them a million houses that ended up buying some other listing 4 months later through a listing agent. And they had no recourse. They didn't treat their business like a business. And so you will adapt the buyer representation agreement if you're tired of taking time away from yourself and your family and working for free, because there are people out there that want you to open doors with zero intention of you ever writing an offer for them. Their entire objective would be to go through the listing agent and then say, hey, I'm representing myself, so I want the BAC to come off the price, but you write all the paperwork, right? I'm almost happy that this is a standard, because if you look over the 8 years, the people in that class, I would say maybe only 1% used buyer representation agreements religiously.
That is a huge benefit coming out of this. That's a huge benefit. Now that's our cover. It's not optional. You have to sign this in order for us to work together.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's for the betterment of the industry as a whole. We have to do it. And now it's easier to explain. Oh, there's a law that came down and this has to be part of it. Now, how you fill it out is, you know, depends on your own comfort level, but they will be signing this buyer representation agreement.
Mm-hmm. I want to get to some of our responses and questions and comments here. Daniel Anderson said, I bet in a year we will be talking about unintended consequences. This feels like the classic solution in search of a problem that creates ripples that were never anticipated. And I absolutely agree. Absolutely. Yeah. The reality is, and this is what we kind of started the show with, Joe, I mean, everybody hates change, but the change is here. And sometimes my experience is, people spend so much energy and thought and time fighting the change that they don't navigate through the change. And that's what I would encourage our listeners and people in our industry to do is look, this change is here. We can't fight it. So let's get through it. And yes, no one here asked for this change and no one here is saying that this is great for the consumer in all ways. There probably will be some benefits to them. And there will be, to be fair, there'll be some benefits to us. We just hit on that with the buyer agreements being required. Anna Marie DeVault said, no more commissions. We get professional fees for our services. I've been getting paid via buyers, lenders for months using this verbiage. Paul Barnes Brotherton said, Good morning, listing agent. I'm sending over a seller fee agreement for my client's offer. As soon as that is returned to me, signed by the seller, I can send my client's offer over to you. That way, it is an agreement between buyer's agent and sorry, it says see more, and I didn't click on that. I'm not sure if that's how that's going to work. Good comment. That's one of those things that we'll see how things shake out. Crystal Seeley says this will affect the consumers with limited means the most. Absolutely the case. Yeah, first time home buyers with little cash to close who previously probably needed closing costs and now will need some commissions as well, built somehow in there as a concession. It's going to definitely affect them. Let's see here. I've got a few more.
I did find the one in Masters that I thought was interesting from 2 days ago. Crystal McNeil says, okay, help me make sense of this. Seller hires agent to sell their house. Seller decides not to pay a BAC. The house sells, and then in brackets, maybe it sells if they're going that route. I'm paying the listing agent and nobody else. And then the seller has to pay a BAC to buy a replacement house. So the seller is still paying two commissions, right? You're still paying a full commission. Potentially, it might be better, at least in the short term, your seller should consider paying that buyer's agent commission because this is kind of too new. The people that fold their arms, I think, really are going to have a difficult time selling. I think the sellers should at least consider, hey, if someone brings in an offer, we should pay that. Because as the buyer representation agreement reads, it says, hey, to the buyers, the buyer will pay X amount of dollars or percentage of sale price to the buyer's agent, but the buyer's agent is going to make all efforts to get that from the seller side, right? So if you say my buyer representation agreement is, say, 2.5 as an example, and they offer out, say, 2.0 as an example, it's our job to try and get that 0.5 from the seller. All the while, it is eyes wide open. It'll be a yes or a no or some negotiation. And then the buyer knows what they're dealing with. Okay, well, does the price change if I still have to make up the difference in commissions with my buyer agent? Is my offer lower? That remains to be seen. But I think in the short term, the people that are putting like $1 for BAC or zero, I think it's going to be tough, and we'll have to see how it shakes out after June and how we all settle in when the dust clears, what the new norm is, I guess.
Hey, I thought of something the other day. And this is one of those things, we don't know how this is going to play out, but you remember in the old days, and by the way, we're in the old days. Remember in the old days how you'd work with a seller and you'd say, hey, if you also buy with me, I'll reduce your commission. I wonder if on a similar vein, when we are listing someone's house, we'll build into the listing their buyer side commission, right? Hey, I'm going to list your house for X, which is more than normal, but that's going to also be how I get paid to represent you to buy a house. It'll be interesting to see how that shakes out. Daniel Anderson said, I heard from Inman that when all is said and done, past buyers who jump on the class action payout, they might get $100. I'm not surprised. The attorneys, a lot of people have been commenting on how the attorneys are the big winners here. Julie Felsman said something like this is common in lending. Many of us, including me, have a commission cap built into our compensation above a certain loan amount. For me, around $700,000, I don't get a penny more. That is true in the lending world. Yeah. Julie Felsman also said the key is whether BAC shows on the buyer side or seller side of the closing disclosure. Jeff Wyron seemed to believe, and again, I don't know if this was his opinion or if this was based on something he knew factually, that buyers are paying the commissions. So if it's coming from the selling side, it's going from the seller to the buyer, and then the buyer side of the closing statement shows it. Paul Barnes Brotherton said, I'll be interested to see what happens with coming soon listings at the crux of all of our marketing rules is NAR's clear cooperation policy. With the policy neutered, we should be able to get back to the Wild West in our pre-listing marketing efforts. And then Julie Felsman also said, for sure, we are still talking about unintended consequences from Dodd-Frank, loan officer comp rules, tolerance limitations on fees 15 years later. So she's agreeing that there will absolutely be some unintended consequences from all of this, as we've addressed.
You know, another nice thing about the settlement is before the settlement, everybody was getting their own little Aaron Brockovich letters in the mail, like, did you buy real estate in the last so many years? You might be entitled to your portion of $138 million. That was posted in Masters. And with the settlement, that kind of all goes away. And I agree, after the attorneys are paid, anybody who's has a stake in that suit is not getting full commission reimbursement. They're getting pennies on the dollar.
Mm-hmm. I have a couple questions that I wrote down on some notes that I wanted to bring up today. One of my questions, and time will tell as this plays out, I think I have an opinion on this, but it's a legitimate question, is will we still have sellers agree on a set BAC in our listing contracts? Or will we meet with a seller and just simply have them agree on our listing side commission, with the understanding that they will later decide how much they're paying the buyer's agent, right?
Great question.
I think it's going to be the latter. I personally think it's going to be the latter. I think I'm going to go to a seller and say, and Jeff Wyman made such a great point yesterday. He goes, in our conversations, it'll probably be healthy to say, hey, in the old days, you would have paid X for both agents. Congratulations, that has changed. You are now just going to pay me this, but you should be prepared to pay the other agent when we get the offer, and you can decide that amount at that time. I thought that was some good scripting there.
Oh, correct. Absolutely.
Another question I have was, when we sign buyer agreements, will they state a percentage that we're going to make? But then will they state that we are willing to accept less if that's all the seller is willing to pay? I don't know.
That's all part of the negotiation.
Yeah.
That can easily be added to it. The other question that we've gotten recently is, let's say you have an overlapping buyer representation agreement. So what I mean by overlapping is somebody is looking in a general area at a general price range. It would be different if you have one buyer rep agreement in Oregon and then a buyer rep agreement in Washington, where neither is licensed in both. That's not necessarily overlapping, but let's say I have a buyer representation agreement for somebody in Lake Oswego, and then spring break, I go to Palm Desert for 10 days. And I have someone cover my business. What does that look like? Do they have to get a temporary buyer representation with the buyer? Do I have to kill mine and then they use theirs and then reinstate mine? And I think that too can be covered with a couple simple lines added to it. While on vacation, this buyer rep is assigned to this person for this period of time, and then it reverts back to you. I think that's a pretty easy solution. The other thing with the buyer representation that's come up is, let's say someone has a buyer representation agreement with a broker and they decide, you know what, this person isn't very knowledgeable. They live really far from the area we're looking in. We want to go with the expert in the area, for example. What can we do? Can we advise to them that they need to kill the buyer representation agreement with them first? One of the things the real estate commissioner says is stay in your lane. And the number one thing is, A, we're not attorneys, right? And B, stay in your lane. But if somebody signed this agreement with somebody else and then wants to move to somebody else, you know, this could potentially affect your commission. If you're going to work with them as buyers and there's a buyer representation agreement that they signed floating out there with someone else, that could very well affect, even though you have a buyer representation agreement with them. I mean, it could. So there's a lot of unknowns. And with every brand new law case, whatever the decision is on that law case sets precedence. And then they always refer to it with those cases in the future. So I guess the rule of thumb is there's a lot of unknowns. We don't have all the answers, and NAR doesn't have all the answers. But if you put your nose to the grindstone and up your level of professionalism, and if you don't already, build yourself your buyer representation packet to prove your worth. Look, the beauty is in the person who has these agreements. You sign a listing. I have a listing for a duration of this amount of time at this negotiated commission, and here's all the variables in the listing. You're sort of bulletproof, and it either sells or it doesn't. But if it sells, you're getting paid. Well, now we have to do that on the buyer's side. And there's a lot of education that has to go out to the buying public, to the selling public, as well as to the brokers in the business.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Hey, I want to get to this. Rick Gray, who has been on this show several times.
Happy birthday, Rick.
He's a fantastic real estate coach. I've coached with him for several years. Awesome guy. Very, very knowledgeable. And I encourage any of our listeners who are looking for a good coach to reach out to him. He sent me an email with some thoughts on some of these changes that I wanted to share some of. Not having compensation in MLS anymore. Every offer will be a new negotiation on commissions. Commercial real estate does this right now. Commissions are negotiated on each transaction. Get buyer's agency agreements signed up front. He said, not a good result for the consumer, even though that's how it was billed in the first place. Get listings. The rich will get richer. I agree with that. I mean, listing agents have always been king, but they're going to be kings of kings now. Will not bring prices down. Doesn't change supplier demand, which is what affects prices. I agree with that. I think there's some noise in some of these blogs and Facebook posts that I'm seeing where they're talking about it changing prices. I don't see that being a reality. He said MLSs will lose influence. More listings will not go into the MLS. More pocket listings. That's an interesting thought. Selling agents and brokerages will try to double in deals more now in the guise of saving the seller's money, but ultimately not in the best interest of the seller. Consumers will lose in the end. Attorneys will win, right? Good thoughts there. Let's see. It does ban the NAR requirement to join MLSs. I don't know if everybody, we haven't talked about that on this show, but that was a part of the settlement. Is currently all of us who are members of PMAR, and I think members of RMLSs, in fact, or EMAR, had to be members of NAR in order to get access to MLS. That will change in the future, which will create a situation where NAR will lose influence, I think, which is what the intended consequence was, by the way. I think in that lawsuit, they kept calling them a cartel, if you remember.
He said the decoupling of commissions isn't equivalent to lowering of commissions, right?
He did say that, yeah.
For the sellers out there thinking, hey, I don't have to pay the buyer's commission anymore. Well, it's true. You don't have to, but brokers don't work for free. It is a valuable service. If it wasn't a valuable service, there would be no such thing as realtors anymore, right? So just because it's decoupled doesn't mean a seller today should say, okay, I'm going to pay my listing agent X and screw everybody else, because there's still another necessary other side that we need to compensate to bring us buyers. There's no rule that says you have to, but wouldn't you like the power of our RMLS, as well as the people outside of RMLS now that's also included? You do want that. So I just don't want those sellers that are opportunists to say, hey, it's decoupled, I don't have to pay it anymore. Now the commission is just the listing side. And I think it's up to the broker to sort of explain, should somebody come in with an offer and they say, we want our broker to be compensated by you, that's something to think about. And letting them know in advance is very important.
Mm-hmm. Another thought here, Department of Justice wins, attorneys win, sellers may win, buyers, the actual consumer, lose. I thought that was a powerful statement. Agents lose and brokerages lose. Buyers will suffer the most as brokers and agents will adapt. Limited service buyer services will likely emerge again, like they did for short sales, trying to figure out how to keep buy side revenue. TC services for buyers could emerge from brokerages at a flat fee, for example. Title companies could offer these types of services, even though that could hurt their source of business since they'd be upsetting their agents, which would be interesting. And I think we've talked about that on this show. Prices will not drop. Inventory will not increase. In fact, it will more likely decrease. Buyers lose. They are being denied representation. They don't win in any way you look at this. NAR will likely see a greatly diminished membership. Unless the seller pays the BAC, home ownership will get more expensive for buyers. Buyers will come straight to the listing agent even more. We've talked about that. Some agents will say, go get your own representation or sign here for X amount and I'll write it for you unrepresented. We've talked about that. Huge opportunity for agents to get buyers from listings like never before. Interesting comment, right? And this goes back to the rich getting richer. Those with a lot of listings, there will probably be more phone calls, more sign calls, whatever you want to call it, coming straight to the listings than there were before. Your value proposition as an agent is more important now than ever. Absolutely. Chaos breeds opportunity for those that roll up their sleeves and make the most of it. And I absolutely agree with that. There is a lot of chaos out there right now. And there's a lot of people losing their heads. Stop losing your head. That's not going to help you. That's not going to help you. You got to power through this change. Don't fight the change.
Exactly. And it seems like the more experienced brokers are sort of taking it in stride, where some of the newer ones are spinning out and really freaking out. And there isn't a need to do that. Just, you know, get a little wood on the ball, stay in your lane, just be prepared for how it comes. But I can't state enough, up your game. And when I started 100 years ago, there was a saying that you have to list to last.
Somebody just said that. Andrew Bling Nordby just posted that. Yeah,
go ahead, Joe. Yeah, you have to list to last. It's standard even today that a listing agent, you could be on vacation in Mexico and three of your listings can sell. You can't do that with a buyer, right? How can you show buyers houses and write offers and such when you're gone? So listings are king, and I believe whoever has been trained as a great listing agent will prevail. And look, listing agents become buyer agents if your sellers stay locally, right? And that's the beauty of listings. You get potentially two transactions instead of just one. But the listing side, if priced correctly and marketed correctly, is almost guaranteed money. You know, we say never count your chickens before they hatch, but it's almost guaranteed money. And the spinoff that you get from a listing is your sign in the yard, your marketing, your advertising. And now, if the trend is buyers to call the listing agent directly, you might even have the buyer that you write. You only represent the seller, but write the offer for the buyer. And maybe you make a little bit more money than you would have as just a listing agent participating in a sale with a buyer's agent. I really liked the way it was before. I think we have reverse engineered it. And I think it's exponentially difficult for the buyer to pay their buyer broker. It's just so difficult after all of their costs. And I believe it's easier to structure it as a built-in structure. And so they are decoupled, but that works best with buyer financing and buyer cash on hand and everything. And I hope it continues that way. But again, it's all a negotiation.
Mm-hmm. Do you guys want to hear some good news?
Yeah.
From a timing standpoint, I think this is about the best time this could have happened. And let me explain. Remember how I said in 2021, which was a very hot year, there was something around $100 billion in commissions across the country, right? Well, we are in a down market. We are in a down market. And so I do think there's going to be downward pressure on commissions. The whole pie will go down. But it's happening at a time that I think we already are down and probably poised to start going up as far as transaction count and commissions. So it feels to me like the impact of this won't be felt as dramatically because the downward pressure will start to come on commissions this summer as upward pressure was starting to come with us hopefully coming out of a very bleak market in 2023. So to just put numbers out there, let's just say in 2021, there was $100 billion in commissions. Let's say last year, and I'm making this number up because I don't know the real number. Let's say in 2023, there was $65 billion because it was a down market, right? Let's say we next 2025, for example, let's say it's a much better market than 2023. So there normally would have been, say, $90 billion in commissions. But because of this downward pressure, maybe there's only $75 billion of commissions. It's still going to feel like we're improving from where we were. I don't know if anyone else followed that or if that makes sense to anyone else, but it's a thought that I had recently. Hey, I want to get to a couple more of these, and then I've covered everything that I had to talk about, Joe, and then I'll let you sign off with some final thoughts.
Sure.
So we could let everybody go. Julie Felsman said, have you talked about how listing agents will handle the liability of unrepresented buyers? I think the whole idea of unrepresented buyers is there's little liability because they're signing that they're representing themselves and you have no liability. Double-ended transactions, however, could have more liability. And yes, we've all agreed that there will probably be more transactions where the agent double-ends it and is representing both. And there will probably be more problems as a result of that.
The unrepresented buyer should always be unrepresented. Look at a divorce attorney. You have, let's say, a guy and a gal are getting divorced, and the attorney isn't gonna like make his point for the wife, and then walk over to the other table and then make a point for the husband. Right? Stay in your lane. Represent only one person. Attorneys only represent one party on things like this. So you do not have to represent both. Continue representing the seller. And the key word is unrepresented buyers. They are still unrepresented. If you want to do the work and write the offer and do all the stuff and maintain your relationship with the seller and maybe get compensated a little bit more for this offer, you can. But I highly encourage you not to represent both.
Correct. And if you do, you're looking for the win-win. And somebody put it well the other day. They said, if you're on both sides and you are representing both sides, you're no longer the coach, you are the referee. In other words, you're saying, buyer, what do you want to offer? Okay, seller, here's what the buyer's offering. What do you want to reply with? And you can't be telling each party. I mean, that's where you're going to run aground is if you're advocating for one more than the other or better than the other. Jennifer McLaughlin said, never waste a good crisis. Pivot and still win. Great advice. And then Marianne Sinkler said, competition to get listings will increase as buyers agents switch sides. And I see no reason to disagree with that. I think all would be wise to move in that direction and focus on listings, which has always been a good thing, but now more so than ever. Joe, any final thoughts before we let people go?
Yeah. Don't panic. Up your buyer representation game and prove value. And always, you know, this has turned into my motto because I say it so much, but master your craft.
Mm-hmm.
Just like a doctor, this is not a good part-time profession. And this isn't a very good full-time profession for people who aren't continually learning and aren't continually trying to master their craft and know absolutely everything there is to know about what we do, because that's what it takes to be successful in this business. Anything short is how we get the statistics of the people that gave it a shot and it didn't work out.
Mm-hmm.
Those are my final thoughts.
Yeah. Hey, I want to thank our listeners and our live audience. By far the biggest live audience we've ever had, maybe four times what we normally have. Great feedback, great questions, great comments. This has been one of my favorite podcasts. I don't know about you, Joe.
Yeah.
It was fun to try to keep up with everything and try to get everybody involved. And if I missed your comment or question, I apologize. I was doing my best. And gosh, this was awesome. Thank you all. And thank you, Joe. And we'll be back soon, guys.
All right. See ya. Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to the Portland Real Estate Podcast, Oregon and Washington's number one show for cutting edge real estate discussions. Also, I'd like to give a shout out to the members of Masters in Real Estate, a private and exclusive Facebook group, and the number one source for all real estate topics. Thanks for being there, gang. I love you. Finally, I want to thank our faithful listeners. Without an audience, we're just two guys talking to each other. Make sure you hit the subscribe button so the new episodes automatically come to you. Make it great.